This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 512, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 512. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Romeldo Feltrinelli.
Nope.
And Josh Flanagan.
Sorry. It's just like music in my ears, that one.
It's not my name.
Ron Richards.
Yes, thank you.
You know what? That's fine. Carry on.
We are iFanboy. I was. Someone told me that's what your name was.
That's what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a stack of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books, some other stuff, maybe some listener mail. It'll be a fun time, but there will be spoilers. So watch out. This is a review show. We'll be talking about the books. So if you haven't read the books, pause the show, come back, exercise some caution. This week, Ron had the pick of the week.
Are you sure Romildo didn't have the pick? Or?
Romildo.
He did my mind.
So this week, solid week, at least for me. I had a nice healthy stack, like 10 to 15 books to read, and there were some mighty interesting things. But I decided to break the trend of picking a number one issue. Well. Which we fall for so sadly. But I settled on Phonogram, the Immaterial Girl, number 4, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Jamie McKelvey, colors by Matt Wilson, letters by Clayton Cowles, edited by Chrissy Williams.
We like number ones and old standbys, so you're still in line, kid.
I haven't moved outside of the parameters, huh? Yeah. I don't think I've picked a Phonogram issue since it has come back, right?
No.
Okay. Well, there you go. Before I start talking about it, did you guys read this issue?
I think so. Yes. I mean, I read it. I physically read it.
The main gist of this.
Wait. Connor, can you explain to me what happened in this issue?
No, I cannot.
I want you to try.
Well, it was funny though because it came up earlier in the week where Josh, I think you made some references to you hadn't read it yet or you were behind, you hadn't read the previous two issues, and my response was just read it. You actually don't need to read the other two issues because you won't know what's going on anyway.
I had read the other issues. I just didn't remember it. Yeah, so I don't take that as you will.
Okay. But anyway, the real uniqueness of this issue is the fact that the entire issue is a homage or a tribute to Brian Lee O'Malley's Scott Pilgrim series. Which
Whoa. Connor, did you get that at all?
No.
Seriously?
What?
Nothing. The whole time I was like, there's something going on here and I'm not sure what. But okay. And I
Are you guys screwing with me?
No.
Really?
Just me.
I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, now I see the chapter headings are similar, but that is it.
What? How do you not pick up on it? Like, so like, look at the cover.
Okay.
I don't have a look at the cover.
Okay, the cover is a direct homage to the first volume of Scott Pilgrim.
Right.
Okay, and then the headers, the fonts are the same, and then even the first page, the first and second page are done in the smaller digest size with the black bars on top.
Ron, I don't see fonts.
And then, well, anyway, this is just yet another example. As everyone who's a longtime listeners of the show know that I'm a huge fan of the work of Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey. I've been a fan since Phonogram Number One came out, Jesus, a very, very long time ago. And what I find really interesting about their post-Marvel work
It's not post-Marvel. He's still writing Darth Vader.
No, but them as a team. They did Young Avengers, and then they moved over and did Wicked and Divine, and now doing Phonogram again. And Jamie's not drawing for Marvel anymore. So, you know. But the thing is, the point I'm trying to make is that it kind of started with Young Avengers, but I think that they were constrained in what they were doing. And then it spilled over into Wicked and Divine, and now it's spilled over also into Phonogram, is that as a collaborative creative team, that, you know, they've established, they know that their language of comics, they know how to make comics together. They have continued to challenge themselves from issue to issue of their work to do different unique things and push the boundaries of what making comics together means. Which I find, as a fan of the medium and a fan of comics and a fan of things that are different, I'm infinitely fascinated by it and appreciative of it. The Wicked and Divine, they've experimented with, you know, they did that whole cut-up issue, the remix issue, where they just took previous panels and just relettered them and all that sort of stuff. And in this particular case, on Phonogram, they tell the fourth chapter of this ongoing story that has shifted. They've shifted location. Previously, the stuff that's been happening has been happening in London. Now they go back to Bristol, to which is where Phonogram, the Singles Club, the second volume took place, the nightclub where that one night happened, and all the while doing a clever homage to Brian Lee O'Malley and Scott Pilgrim, of which, you know, Inside Baseball, they're friends with him, and that's why in the credits it says apologies to Mal.
I think I maybe read that 8 years ago last.
Oh, yeah. All right. So
I'm not actually faulting the creators other than, like, I don't remember everything.
Right.
It's too much.
That's a Josh problem.
Well, no. This is a... It's going to get us all.
Sooner or later.
Too much.
Yeah.
Hey, look, today, here's another 12-episode series. Watch it all today. Tomorrow's another one. Eventually, we're all going to die.
Right. Well, which is a good point, which just kind of ties into the premise of this story, which, you know, kind of features these two characters that are a bit at war, that are kind of at odds with each other, don't like each other, a bit of rivals, but then they're forced to join together to DJ a night at the club in Bristol, and in doing so, they end up having, you know, a bit of a battle, and then by the end of the issue, they realize, you know, that maybe they're better off, you know, not fighting so much. And that maybe they should be teaming up and that sort of thing. I just thought that it'd be real easy to say, hey, we should do an issue like Scott Pilgrim and turn the volume on up too high. And I thought that the homage aspect of it was done with the right balance. You know, it was mainly done through titles and you know, like we said, fonts and things like that, but also just with the spirit and the nature of it, the fact that there's a big battle in the middle, and that was very Scott Pilgrim-esque, but they still were able to do it with that Gillen McKelvey style of storytelling, and the bouncing between black and white and color gave it enough to ground it in the world of Phonogram versus just being a, you know, kind of hacky kind of send up to Scott Pilgrim. So Phonogram is not for everyone. I mean, I was looking at the sales numbers the other day, and comparing the Wicked and the Vine to Phonogram sales numbers is just depressing.
That's interesting, because I think they're very similar, and it almost feels like Phonogram is, in a way, easier to grasp.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a simpler concept, I suppose. Maybe it's just when it came out and what it was then.
How did you grasp this issue, though?
I liked the. I don't know that I was recognizing that it was, I mean, now that you told me and I'm looking at it, yeah, of course, but I just hadn't really put that together.
Which I think is right, because if Jamie was drawing with big eyes and all that sort of stuff, then that would be too much, you know?
Oh, no. Right. Well, you know what I thought it was? I thought it was referencing something that had already happened in this book because it was in black and white. And I was like, oh, they're going back to the roots of that.
Right.
And I read it digitally, so I wasn't like looking at the cover or anything. So, but I got it. Like, the idea was that there were these two people who hate each other, and then they found out it's just because I really liked the psychology of it. I suppose yeah. It was like, well, this is just, it was hating ourselves by proxy is what they called it,
right?
Which I thought was really elegant, and nicely done. So I enjoyed that part. But I'm also like, there's a certain point where with this book where I understand that I'm not getting most of the references, so I just breeze on by, you know, and figure I'll either figure out or I won't.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, is that something that is so reference laden requires to be told in a manner that is really good. In that even if you don't get the references, you can still get the gist of what the story is. And I think that's what. And the thing is, it's taken nearly 10 years for Kieran to get there. But I think he's there. I think that, you know, the first phonogram was way too referential, you know, and then the second phonogram did not rely on references. It relied on references as mood, you know, where less about, you know, more about the fact that there's a Blondie song playing while they're at the club than about, you know, a lyric of a Blondie song that is said by a character that has this meaning, you know what I mean? Like it's the, you know, those kind of levels. And I think that, you know, this issue for me as a Los Campesinos fan, which is a band that's out of Bristol, that Kieran is also a fan of, but is, you know, by all intents and purposes, a very low level, fairly unknown indie band. There are lots of references in there that I got that I think don't hinder the story, that you still can get it without knowing those references. And that's what makes that, and that's what makes their evolution so fun to watch, to see that they've actually got there, you know? So I don't know. I just like that. I like the creativity of it. I like the, of course, you know, we all like Scott Pilgrim, and, you know, like it was nice to kind of revisit that kind of aesthetic, but while them putting their own kind of unique touch on it, and yeah, I'm just loving the series, and you know, we only got two more issues to go, and I'm gonna savor them. So,
well, all right.
So, but that said, there were several other close calls, and for a moment, I read Secret Wars 2 number 1, and that's Secret Wars TOO number 1, and thought, could I pick this?
Because if you did, you could have only done it based on the first short story.
Which is like, wow, right?
Did you
guys read these? Or?
Well, yeah. This was like last night I read it. We were recording some shows last night, as we do every night of our lives forever. and it was late, and I still hadn't finished my comics, and so I was just sort of trying to power through them. And I read the first short story by Jonathan Hickman with art by Brian Chirilla. Yep. And I just went on to our Slack channel. I was like, make sure you read this. You know, like, and I just hadn't even checked to see if you already had. I was like, just, you have to read this, because it was like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, we have to talk about this.
It was, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that this got through.
I'm not, though, because Marvel's got a long history of doing these kind of stories.
Yeah, no, which, yeah.
That was a different time.
Well, that was a different time.
Yeah, but that's, it's not like it's not in their DNA. It's in their DNA.
Well, no, but it is in their DNA, but I got to give it up to Hickman.
Explain what it is in case anybody hasn't.
Yeah, so basically, this is a little anthology story of humorous stories set in around the Secret Wars thing, and normally they do this at the end of it. It's kind of like to let off steam, to tell, as they call them, silly stories. And there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 little stories. Of them, 6 of them are all worth reading. One of them is just worth ignoring. But the first one is a 6-page story. Written by Hickman with art by Chirilla, and it is completely through the fourth wall, self-aware story of Jonathan pitching Secret Wars at their creative retreat. You know, like, as we all know, Marvel has these creative retreats, and him pitching the story, and then Dan Buckley telling everybody that everybody's working on this, and that this is going to be the be-all and end-all. And that is all going to be fine because they know Hickman's going to deliver. And meanwhile, his inner dialogue is that he doesn't have an ending.
Those three panels on page 2
yeah,
were basically the word balloons at the top are Dan Buckley just saying, I need everyone to wrap up everything you're doing. We're going to cancel the entire schedule. The next one, we're risking millions of dollars and quite frankly a few jobs, and then each panel is pushing further and further in on Hickman's worried brow. And if you've ever met Jonathan Hickman, he's like, worried and anxious are not something you get off of him. So that's what makes this even more impressive. Like, he's a guy who seems to exude quite a bit of confidence in himself, but this is just like, yeah, but look under here.
Yeah.
And he's just going, I don't have an ending. And he pushes in further. I don't have an ending. Pushes in further. Bold text. I don't have an ending.
Still doesn't.
Still doesn't.
But then you know, it turns and he goes to throw up in the bathroom, and Dr. Doom is there talking to him. And I love that interplay between Doom and Hickman talking about, you know, his anxiety, basically, and not being able to finish this. And Doom. I just love Doom. I love Doom in these silly scenarios.
And the thing is that this is this does harken back, like you said, harken back to a Marvel comics of yore, you know, where I'm, you know, and you know, where these kind of things happen, where the creators would talk to the creations, and you know, all that stuff was nice. But it's even more like, honestly, like Eisner worthy short story, because talk about opening up opening up the curtains to see into his insecurity around doing something like that, you know? It's, I was shocked. I couldn't believe that, A, that they did it and that Hickman wrote it. And the thing is, like, this isn't like a joke. Like, this is, I bet you this is really, and the conversation with him and Doom really seems very sincere, you know?
Yeah, and the word, like, then he goes back and he has a meeting with Axel and Brevoort, and they're just, and like, they totally reassure him.
Yeah.
Like, personally, I'm not worried. You've never failed to bring it home. Look, we've worked together long enough. He says this, which was so, like, it's not a joke. We've worked together long enough for me to know that what sometimes works best for you is clearly defined parameters, expectations, and results. Do you think that would help? And I was like, this is just their business meeting. Yeah. like they're saying to him, if we tell you exactly what to do and when, you will be okay with it. And I was like, I'm like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, no, I was,
but then the other option is, if you don't, you'll get fired. And then the last panel says, editor's note, Jonathan Hickman, Marvel Comics employee, 2008 to 2015.
Right, which is also a little metatextual, because he's gone. yeah.
It's great, so, and the art was fantastic.
The art was great, yeah. And then and some of the interplay with Doom was really nice, where Doom, you know, where Doom's telling him not to worry about not having an ending. He's like, says in his Doom speak, you're a single insignificant cog in the great storytelling machine of Marvel Comics. Better men than you have been sacrificed on the altar of timely entertainment. You know, like, it's, and then Jonathan says, you know, well, it's going to ship on time. And Doom goes, even if it doesn't, it won't matter. I was shocked that this made it to print.
We're going for eight.
Yeah, exactly. But also in this issue, there were three that also stood out. Was the Rob Guillory writing and drawing his own little 4-page story, which is fun, with Galactus getting hacked.
He put a lot in those 4 pages.
He did. He really did. The Ryan Brownie of God Hates Astronauts taking his take on the X-Men with his classic style of sound effects. You know, when Cyclops shoots his optic blast and said, "Optic blast!" And so,
but this is also really subversive in that all these stories commented on how kind of dumb Secret Wars was.
Yep.
In terms of, it doesn't make any sense. Just go with it.
Yep.
Or it's a different world where Namor likes hummus.
Yeah.
You know, I find it all very sort of ballsy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all was very. It was very inside, more inside than I thought it would be. So, and then of course they make fun of themselves at the end by saying Secret Wars isn't over. There's still two more to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh God. Well, good job, Marvel. I applaud you. And good job, Hickman.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So Batman Europa came out Batman Europa number one, which is a book that has been announced for 11 years.
I did not even know what this was when it came out.
It sounds familiar. Can you
give us the high level?
So I did the same thing. I was like, I feel like I've heard of this before. And yes, because you've been hearing about it for 11 years. So Jim Lee lived in Italy for a year. And he got an idea to do a Batman book with all your Italian artists that he met. And then it just never came out.
Just never did it.
So now what you've got here with issue one is a Batman story that is co-written by Brian Azzarello and Italian writer Matteo Castigliano. Matteo Casali. And Giuseppe Camicoli is doing all the layouts, and then Jim Lee is doing all the
sort of painted finishes over the Giuseppe Canacoli layouts. And it's a sort of an anthology. I mean, it's not really an anthology because it's one story, but each issue is going to a different art team and a different setting, a different European setting. So this issue takes place in Berlin.
Yep.
So it's basically Batman's international adventures. And it was supposed to have featured an international cast of creators, but I don't know if that's happening anymore. I don't think it is. But this is fun because if you are someone who misses the old universe, this is old school Batman with the underwear over his tights and no extraneous lines on his costume and fighting an old school Joker. And the story is that basically Batman and the Joker are both infected with the same virus, and so they have to team up together to figure out how to find the cure.
That's very similar to the Batman Lego Batman 3 plot.
Is it? But this is actually...
which took less than 10 years to make.
I would recommend this, Ron, to you, because this is actually really good, Jim Lee.
Oh, I read it. Yeah, no, I definitely checked it out because it seemed interesting. And I like the artwork, and I like the idea of Jim Lee working on top of Giuseppe Camicoli, who we know we like, you know.
Yeah. I like the idea of Jim Lee, too.
Right, yeah. It was the Jim Lee style of, like, remember he did the CBLDF thing with Neil Gaiman?
Yes.
It was more that kind of more like quote-unquote artistic style, right. You know, than comic book art, you know, kind of thing. And I it's good. It looks good. Alfred has two hands. I didn't understand.
Well, because it's you know.
I know. I'm kidding.
It's right is what yeah. it is.
Yeah. We'll get back to that later in the show.
When did they add Bill Finger as a credit?
That's something that's been happening the last few months.
I know.
You haven't really mentioned it on the show, but I still haven't gotten over seeing Batman created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. I never, ever thought I would see that ever.
Does Bill Finger have an iconic signature? Because Bob Kane's really out ahead of him on that one.
You know, I don't know. You know, they didn't really sign their work back then.
Didn't Bob Kane has like the, it's like a big O.
Yeah.
And like I can, you can recognize it.
Mm-hmm. I like this. I thought this was fun. It was a nice little taste of old school Batman. And I actually like the Jim Lee art here. So if you're a Batman fan, I recommend checking it out. But it's one of those. This is one of those series that we never thought we'd see.
Well,
so I'll just patiently wait now for All-Star Wonder Woman. Remember when Adam Hughes told us it was almost done?
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, that's been solicited. That's been solicited, isn't it?
No, this time. This time, I mean it.
Yeah. No. That ship has sailed, Ron.
But the All-Star Wonder Woman by Grant and Yannick Paquette is solicited.
Right.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. The Adam Hughes one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, the Adam Hughes one, whatever. Yeah. So
that was a lot of years ago.
That was video show years. That was like 2007, 8.
Video show years. All right. Well, moving on. So The Mighty Thor number one from Jason Aaron and Russell Dowderman came out. And this was another strong contender for possibly pick of the week as Jason Aaron's epic run on Thor continues. What did you guys think of this one?
I didn't read it.
You didn't read it? Why not?
Because I don't want this Thor.
Wow, not my Thor.
Not my Thor.
I don't think I saw it.
Wow.
I think I missed this.
Wow.
Because I remember you mentioned it, and I was like, I read a Thor. But maybe that was... See, this is the thing. Like, there was the end of Thor's.
Yeah.
And then they were heavily featured in Secret Wars last week. Thor's
Secret Wars.
I'm Thor with Fex.
Yeah.
I assume I should go read it.
Yeah, no, go read it because so what it is it focuses on, you know, it the story opens on Jane Foster, you know, getting chemo treatment, and Heimdall waiting out in the waiting room for her, which is always nice. So always good to see some Heimdall. But then there's out in space there's some. Dead Asgardians appear and blow up a space station, and so she
catch that. Did you catch that, Connor?
Was that Asgardians? Yeah,
yeah, that was classic. Romaldi.
Asgardians.
Romildo.
I can't remember it. Yeah. It is such a unique name that it will not imprint on me.
But anyway, and then so that we see Jane make the transformation into Lady Thor, and she goes and saves the day, and we get a little more, at least for me, having missed the Lady Thor Jane connection and all the cancer stuff, we get a sense of, you know, it further explains that, you know, her cancer isn't getting any better because the chemo is not taking effect, because when she's not there getting chemo, she's Lady Thor and she's healthy and fine, but her body, like, basically she's vibrant and alive as Thor, but slowly dying as Jane Foster.
I like that. That's nice.
Which is nice.
I read all of these up to now. I just literally just missed that this was a thing.
Yeah. So strong Dowderman.
Yeah. It looks wonderful.
Yeah. If it's funny, if you compare his work to when he first joined this title, like, you see the improvement over time. Very impressive. So, yeah. And at the end of it, we get a reemergence of Loki. So
Loki looking like a combination of that Loki from Kieran Gillen's plus, or at least at the end, and like a little Tom Hiddleston in there, like a redesign, but not bad, like redesign, but good Loki.
Yeah, they're doing their best to mix them up.
Yeah, no, I like it. Look, here's a redesign I'm not complaining about.
Right.
So I want to go ahead and give credit on that.
Right. Okay.
It's weird. Look at his little facial hair squiggles though.
Yeah. I know, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, this is good. I enjoyed it. So
cool. Yeah, I'll read. That was just an oversight. I will totally read that.
Yeah, you should. So, coming out this weekend, another pick of the week contender, but just fell a little short, was Huck number one from Mark Miller and Raphael Albuquerque.
Rafa.
Raphael Albuquerque should draw a Superman book.
You think so? After reading this, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That takes place in Smallville, like young Superman. He should draw that book.
Yeah, there's a lot of Tim Sale going on with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I see that.
I like this a lot.
I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
This is a story of a Superman-esque kid or young man living in a small town who works at a gas station, has powers, and every day helps people, but does it secretly. Everyone in town knows what he's doing. They're all keeping it secret, but makes it a point to help people every day. And then stuff goes wrong. Really, really wrong.
And I just like the. It was funny because I didn't read a lot about this, like in interviews or in press or anything like that, before reading it. And then I went back to see kind of how Miller was positioning it. And he said the one line that kind of resonated with me is that he wanted to play with the idea of someone with like Superman like powers in a world where the heroes didn't exist.
Right. You know? The real world.
In a real world. And by putting it in this small town kind of thing, and with this guy who seems kind of, you know, touched, you know, and like,
okay,
no, but it just like, and the idea that, you know, the idea of, you know, some, you know, he's orphaned as a baby, and with the one note is just like, please love him, and him turning it around and making it his mission to just be nice, do nice things for people. It's just like this this Mark Miller optimism that we first saw emerge with Starlight, you know, last year. It's just, I just love it. Just it's like warm and fuzzy and positive, and just, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so. No, you're absolutely right. It is, it's continuing whatever it is that he's been doing with comics. I mean, and you know, when I spoke to him, I actually read this a while back before I spoke to him, and I really liked it then. And then it's been a while since then, but it totally. This is like from speaking to him. This is what it feels like to speak to him. Like this is all these good vibes coming out of this, and you've got this idea of like a genuinely good person, which is what Superman is like, but in this town full of other good people, you know, like all sort of working together, and you know, it's romantic. It's sort of that idealized Eisenhower kind of
American, but it's all going to come crashing down though. I mean, that's the
story. Sure. Started. Yeah.
We have the good vibes here and now, but now the world knows about him, and here comes the media, and it's going to be, we're just going to hate everyone by the end of this.
Right.
You think this will be another six-issue one?
Miller's not doing anything ongoing. This is going to be. I would be surprised if this is more than four issues. Hmm. You know, yeah. I don't know what the full rundown for this is, but you know, I mean, Starlight was what? That was four issues, wasn't it, or was it six? I don't remember. Six. Yeah. But anyway, it was the thing with Sean Murphy was four. Chrononauts was four.
Right. Chrononauts.
You know, but yeah. This. I mean, this was. I mean, I if it's four, I'll take four. You know, it's cool. whatever it takes to tell the story. I like the direction it's going in, though. So.
Well, the great thing about Miller is he's doing these self-contained sort of runs that come out, and then you get a nice trade, and you can hand a single story to somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, he only works with the best artists in comics.
Yeah,
he's set his bar for that, so that when you give somebody that trade, they're getting an example of the best, you know, the best that art the best art there is right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's always nice.
Well, the holidays are coming up, so if you want to give someone great comics, go to ifanboy.com/support. Go click on our Amazon link, and you can shop there. You can give somebody Starlight. You can give somebody Chrononauts. What are some of the other Mark Miller stuff we liked recently? Come on, Ron. You worked there.
Our MPH.
It's MPH,
yeah. Jupiter's Legacy and
Jupiter Circle.
Yeah,
it's all about Starlight though. Starlight is the if you're pressed to give someone a graphic novel for Christmas or Hanukkah, give them Starlight. Yeah.
If you liked Tomorrowland,
yeah,
you should definitely check out Starlight,
which is a lot better than whatever. I watched it again on the plane.
We're gonna get to that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So you can do all your holiday shopping through fanboy.com/support and the Amazon link. Everyone who does that, we thank you very much, and there's always an uptick when that happens in the holiday time. So if you're doing your shopping, if you got your Cyber Monday shopping or your Black Friday shopping through Amazon, please consider going through the ifanboy.com/support link. And on that page, you can also find a membership link, so you can become a member for iFanboy for $3 a month or $30 a year. That helps the show directly, and you can also find a donation button where you can PayPal us any amount you want. Someone just did that this week, and we appreciate that. And any amount, you know, it's the holidays and you got tax purposes. You got to get rid of some of that cash, you know, so send it our way.
You can turn it into, like, listen, if you got to get rid of it.
I'm saying.
Listen, we are a write-off. You can write off a certain amount up towards the arts.
Yeah, so there you go.
That is not safe.
You just made up a thing.
I did.
It sounds completely real.
I did. That is not financial advice. I'm not a licensed accountant. Yeah.
Or unlicensed. You are in no way an accountant.
Yeah.
So ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can help the show out. We thank everyone who does that very much.
Yeah. All right. So continuing the creator-owned world, second issue of Scotty Young's I Hate Fairyland came out. And it's funny because as I read this, I struggle with a combination of enjoying the heck out of the ride and wondering where it's going.
Well, that's good, right?
Yeah. You
wonder where it's going.
Exactly.
It's interesting because this, I don't know if this felt like, I was like, this is only the second issue.
Right.
In that, like, it was just like, here's where we are. And then the second issue, we're over here.
Yep.
And it wasn't. It was almost just existing in this world with these people for a bit instead of driving towards something. Now,
exactly,
that could sound like a criticism, but it isn't.
No, exactly. That's it. You summed up exactly how I felt.
Yeah. And I liked it. I think I liked it more than the first one. Because you get the work out of the way. You're just like, let's just go be there.
Right. And also just every page just oozes with, like, you can feel the fun he's having.
Yes.
It's amazing to see. Like, I don't think there's a sense of amusement more than what he's pouring onto the pages, you know, like in any other comic. So.
Yeah, it was fun. It was supposed to be.
And I like that he's using every possible page. Like a lot of it, like when I worked at Image, like sometimes like the because there's no, like, it has to be 20 pages like Marvel or DC, and so what happened is that sometimes they'd come, you know, books would come in and they'd be 22 pages, 23 pages, 25 pages, and as opposed to, you know, doing a letter column or doing a writing thing or whatever, like he just got a handful of pinups and the story and that's it. And it's just like it's funny because this is a very, I feel like, and it's because, you know, Scotty is an artist, but it's a very art-heavy book. You know, he's still telling a story, he's still writing it as well as drawing it, but I feel like it is more so, it's almost like 60-40 art to story, you know? So
it's, you know, like, what I really want to find a way to draw what I think it would look like if she had been eating only sugar for 30 years.
Yeah, which is funny, so.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah, it's fun. I dig it. Good job, Scotty.
Guys, I'm getting worried about Alfred.
Oh, jeez.
I hear he's only got one hand.
Well, I feel like the loss of his hand is leading to some sort of existential crisis, because in this issue of Titans Hunt number 2, Dick Grayson finds himself in the Batcave looking up some information on the computer, and Alfred shows up wearing a charcoal gray suit and a black T-shirt.
Is he having a breakdown?
He's got to be having a breakdown, because Alfred wakes up in the morning and there's a tuxedo already on his body. And he goes to bed in a fucking tuxedo.
Yep.
And that is what he does. Yep. In the middle, he serves tea.
I love you need to keep him in a box. What if Alfred has dreams?
His dream is to serve the perfect cup of tea.
What if Alfred wants to dress like David Duchovny in a movie in the 90s? What about that, sir?
It's not his dream, Josh, whatever your name is. So that was a problem. Also, I think Dick Grayson is like the world's worst spy. We've already talked about how he wears the G on his chest for no reason.
Because he's Grayson.
And this one. Well, they've already also. I'm not even getting into it. But in this one, he's got a motorcycle and the license plate is gray-1.
Because he's Grayson. I don't know if you realize he's Grayson.
in one of the other issues, I think it was Batman Robin Eternal last week, they referred to him as Grayson in the field, and you know, and while they were in a bar beating people up. And I was like, that's not his code name. It's his name.
Grayson.
Also notable, in Lego Batman 3,
oh, Jesus.
He can be Grayson. He has none of the powers of the regular Robin, but he looks okay.
Grayson.
Also, Grayson. You know how sometimes, and this issue is written by Dan Abnett, and sometimes European writers will mix and not get American words exactly correctly, and I feel like the job of editorial is to fix that.
Fair.
So in this issue, Mal Evans, I think his name is. No, that's not Beatles guy.
Mal Evans, really? Yeah. No, the Beatles roadie.
Mal something. One of the characters, Bumblebee, I think his name is. He wins a bunch of awards because he works in Hollywood. He's a musician, and he won an Oscar and some other made-up award they used. And they kept saying he won it for soundtracks, the best soundtrack.
Like, interesting.
No, he won it for best score.
Oh.
Nobody wins an Oscar for putting together the music on a soundtrack.
Top man. Brilliant.
It's like last year when that Red One book tucked Ted Kopp saying, let's go to the cinema.
Oh, jeez.
So, some vernacular issues. It's all good.
So a lot of angst and Titans Hunt 2 this week. But Ron, in Extraordinary X-Men number 2, I was impressed with how quickly Marvel has swept away the Hank Jean romance.
Oh, yeah. It's head spinning, isn't it?
It was last week, wasn't it last week?
It was last week, yeah.
They got together. this big moment where you assume the music and the score will swell.
Yep.
And they finally, you know, I've always loved you and I always liked you and let's get together. In this issue of Extraordinary X-Men, we see Jean. She's like, yeah, I thought about Hank. I kissed him. He was like, kiss my brother. That's over.
Yeah. It was she's at college in New York City and she's talking to another co-ed. They're at a bar.
There's another guy.
And he's like, he can't believe that, whatever. And he's like, there's nobody else in your life? And she's like, oh, there was one boy, Hank. We tried to make it work for a while, but I've known him since I was a kid. It felt like kissing my brother. So.
That was last week.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I mean, I've been told, supposedly, you know, I've been struggling with the jump after Secret Wars and all stuff like that. I've been told that it's supposed to be 8 months.
No, I know not story time it's been last week. I'm saying comic-wise.
Comic-wise, right. No, I know.
We just had this big build-up to their relationship.
I know.
In the physical comic, and it happened last week, and now this week is like, forget that.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of love that.
Exactly.
I do too. I just think it's funny.
Yeah. And
I
also,
like this issue a lot. I'm
torn on this because I love Lemire and I love Ramos and I love the look of it. But like I was talking about it in my comic book store because the James likes writer. James likes to goad me about the X-Men and was trying to nail down what was putting a bad taste in my mouth over all this, and it's just like it just feels like a big rerun. Like Mpox, legacy virus. You know, the mutants are sterilized, no more mutants are being born, no more mutants. It's like we've done all of this already. And then you throw in the Inhuman bit and you know, and now I guess we reveal that the X-Haven is in limbo. Right. And it just all feels like, and I get that, you know, it's been 40 years and there's, you know, and there's gonna be repetition and the X-Men are soap opera-esque and the same thing, you know, oftentimes the same thing happened over and over again. But it just I don't know. It just feels like just do something different. So.
Well, they are. They're getting rid of the X-Men.
Yeah, I know. Clearly,
that's different.
Yeah, and I also like. So we've got Old Man Logan from Old Man Logan appearing in now, and everyone wants to know Wolverine, how are you back? And he's like, I don't know.
Which I kind of love. I kind of like that though.
But I will.
Wolverine reaction. Yeah.
Yes, I will give them credit. The X-Men are always at their best when Forge is around, and so we've got Forge, so hopefully this is the signs of good things.
I think this book's really fun, and Josh, I think you should check it out because it's very much in the same vein of all new X-Men.
Okay, see, what I was saying, I can like all this stuff, all that stuff happening because I'm not invested in it at all.
Right.
Meanwhile, we come back to me, and I'm like, what is wrong with Hawkeye?
Right.
Why are you doing
this? We all have our things. I know.
Alfred.
Listen, the dude just wants to serve some fucking chamomile.
Yeah. Listen, I can't even bring up Captain America. I don't know why he's mad.
We're gonna get there. We're gonna get there in a couple.
Not old.
Talk about Spider-Man 1 for first.
Yeah,
I really like Spider-Man 1. Spider-Woman 1.
Spider-Woman 1. Jesus.
Spider-Woman 1. Jesus. We're back to Jessica Drew, as written by Dennis Hopeless, with Javier Rodriguez on art and color.
Wasn't that the book before?
Yes.
Okay.
Which I sort of jumped on a little later, and I keep forgetting that of these newer writers, I really like Dennis Hopeless's work a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that the cover is her, and she's wicked pregnant on the front.
Wicked.
And so this issue is sort of about her transition from being on active duty in this little squad of what's basically a Heroes for Hire kind of thing. They go around doing good. It's her, this Porcupine guy, and Ben Urich. I don't really know why Ben Urich's there. It doesn't really seem like Ben Urich, but whatever. He's got a trench coat. It's fine. And she's, you know, she's got to go on maternity leave, more or less. So Carol Danvers is there trying to take care of her, and they have a party, and, you know, it's like a bunch of Marvel characters at a party being quippy and kind of funny. And
anything that the typical, stereotypical Marvel fan loves, it's a book examining the intricacies of a pregnancy.
I really liked it. I mean, you know, if you paid any attention to Dennis Hopeless's life on, you know, in the past couple of years, his wife had twins, so they have two little tiny babies, which is, I mean, that's a tough job right there. I can't imagine doing two at the same time. You know, but this is tinged with a lot of, like, for me, I was like, oh, this, I understand this. And it's a different story because obviously she's a superhero with powers and she's single. And the thing is, they're not saying who the father is. Like, Tony, like, Carol tricks Tony into asking her who the father is, which gets him, like, decked, you know, and she won't say anything. It's fun. I enjoyed it. And it's because it was very grounded, I guess. You know, it was like, it was in this weird, crazy superhero world, and but there was like that undercurrent of this is a real experience. So I enjoyed it.
Well, all right.
And moving on, we can talk about Sam Wilson, Captain America number 3. As you may remember, Captain America 1 and 2 were the most controversial books of all time, because Captain America hates people who don't want immigration. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It was silly. But what we've done here is move along to sort of the next bit of this Sam Wilson as Captain America, as a bit of a downtrodden, like, left the system, now all in his own Captain America, is just trying to do the right thing. And he's turned into a wolf.
Cap Wolf,
yeah.
It's the old Mark Gruenwald concept.
Yeah, it's very silly. Basically, my point is that, like, this series, which was, you know, put all over conservative news for its quote-unquote stance on immigration, which I believe that Nick Spencer really enjoyed. Like, this issue got really quite silly. And so, like, to take a book that everyone was like, you shouldn't be grandstanding about politics or whatever, and then this one, you know, it's still the same story and the same character, but it's quite lighthearted. You know, like, Cap is now a wolf. He's got, you know, like, clothes on, and he's standing, but looks like a bad wolf from that Joe Kelly series. And you've got the Serpent Solutions, which is the sort of the corporatized version of the Serpent Society, and it's fun. There was a lot of jokes, and, like, it's actually quite light and airy and moves along nicely, and it's a fun book. And also, you gotta love that art. you can't not get into the Daniel Acuña. I love it.
Acuña's the best.
Yep. So I like it.
All right, time for a little Star Wars corner.
You read them.
Don't get too excited.
I'm with you.
So Star Wars number 12.
Sure, before we go there, you want to make sure that you read these in order, is what I found. And luckily I did.
Yes, and then the order was Star Wars 12, followed by Vader Down number 1, right?
Right, and also last week it would have been Vader,
yes,
or whatever, yeah, it was.
12.
Then 12, then Vader Down.
They need, yeah, little triangles on their covers.
They do, apparently, yeah.
They have a list.
Yeah, there is a list. There is a checklist.
A list on the back doesn't help you when you've already read through to get to the back.
True.
Well, so what I'm finding in the Star Wars book with Jason Aaron and Stuart Immonen is that with every issue, there seems to be a panel that just sums everything up for me. And the panel for this issue is features Leia, Han, and Chewie all looking at lightsabers that they're holding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we get the whole gang is together. They're on Nar Shada. They're trying to save Luke, who's in the big arena. And R2 stumbles upon the enclave of Jedi artifacts that the Hutt has been hoarding. And he takes a bunch of lightsabers and does the Return of the Jedi, shoot him out of his dome, and gives everybody lightsabers.
You get a lightsaber.
And there's a big lightsaber battle, very akin to Episode 2, you know, in the arena. But this is a hell of fun. It was great. I mean, I know
get out of California now.
What the fuck did you just say?
I said it was a hell of fun, not hella. I said hell of. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. It's a hella.
That's not a phrase. That's
a hell of fun. Sorry. That's not a real phrase. Anyway,
The two things about this book before you get on to Vader Down.
Yeah.
this book really is, if you choose to look at it this way, it's a big hot fudge sundae with sprinkles and cherry and just all of the things that you want on it for like a Star Wars nerd, but at the same time by Jason Aaron and Stuart Eminem. Like it really, it's like just take it and enjoy it and try not to think about it too much.
Exactly.
And it works like that.
Yeah, like I don't want to worry about whether or not you need to have force powers to ignite a lightsaber or not. You know, that classic argument, because Han clearly ignited Luke's lightsaber in Empire.
Yeah,
so,
that's a EU concept that's dumb. Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It really is. It really is kind of a, it's almost therapeutic and like, stop worrying about this nerd. And I go, okay.
Right.
Exactly. And then I read it. There is a storytelling issue in here.
Oh, what was it?
A Stuart Eminem storytelling issue.
What is it?
It looks like the lightsaber lands at Luke's feet.
Yep.
Before R2 shoots it out of his head.
Yeah, I struggled with that as well too.
I looked at that for a long time because I didn't want to believe it was so.
Yeah. Well, what I think it was, yeah.
Right hand panel stacking, which shouldn't be. No, that's fine. Right hand panel stacking is good, but it's out of order. And I guess you could say that like the panel of R2 has the, like that's what was left over from the propulsion, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was like where did the lightsaber come? Oh, it came from R2. That's my guess.
Should have done it the other way.
It should have been the other way around. I agree.
I hate saying that.
Yep, I agree.
There it is.
So
okay, Vader down.
Vader down. So what I like about Vader down is that they're really committing to the concept. So much
crossover.
Well, not so much the crossover, but so this starts off the crossover. Darth Vader's out on his own. He's got word on where, you know, the rebels might be, and he goes on his own in his TIE fighter, and he encounters a squadron of X-wings that are on maneuvers, and it starts this big space battle where he basically kicks ass. It was a lot of fun. It was really cool, although it does bring up other questions. But then he crashes on the planet, and a rebel pilot actually says, "Vader down!" So I just like the commitment to the title.
You know what? I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I like the concept because it's the thing that we've heard about. Like in the prequels, we saw, you know, Anakin Skywalker being really bad.
Yeah.
But this is like Darth Vader being just a weapon of destruction on his own with his force powers in full. And I was like, okay, there's no consequence to this.
Right.
You know, in terms of the overall story. And it was like, well, okay, so now you're backing it up.
Yeah.
And like he flies out and there are, you know, dozens of X-Wing fighters. And they're like, well, we got him. And he just tears them all apart casually. And it all makes sense. It isn't silly. And then he lands on the planet and the rebellion's going to send every single thing they have at him. And he's totally going to walk away.
Yep. Yep.
And I was like, okay, that's great. I don't love the Deodato art, but it wasn't bad.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I was kind of prepping for bad, but there were some shots of like the pilots and Luke in his with the helmet that were really, really good. Some other stuff was a little shaky.
He had a different kind of style going on here than I'm used to. There's a lot more line work, which I think works really well. It's almost like he took a little bit of McNiven and put it in there.
But there was a big thing that I had a big problem with.
Colors?
No, not the face colors. Han and Chewie steering the Falcon.
Oh, look at that. I'm looking right at it.
Oh, yeah. That is not canon, my friends.
What are they doing?
It's almost as if either whatever reference he got for the cockpit of the Falcon was wrong or he just didn't look at it, because the console is down at their knees. And then there is a almost like a steering wheel that is horizontal in front of both of them, and Han has got both hands on it like he's steering the ship.
Yep.
And we all know that that's not there.
Right. And then the pan, what's that flashing? Then the panel under that has a weird flattened.
Oh, not good. Not good. Yeah. He is not strong at drawing the ships and things like that. But yeah, that was the only thing that I was like, And then the other question was that if Vader can use the Force while flying in space, why didn't he do that in Episode 4? But whatever. So
that's a good question. But I don't care. It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a blast. And Vader down. I laughed out loud.
Is it crossing over into all the books?
No. So it's the Marvel crossover plan where they do an issue to start the crossover and then it bounces between the two titles. So. Yeah.
Two titles.
Darth Vader and Star Wars. Leia's over. Leia was a mini. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
I assume that's it for Eminem on Star Wars.
I assume too. I think so. I'm not sure for sure, but yeah, I think so. So I hope not.
Well.
But listen, guys, Vader down.
Vader down.
Vader down.
You know what? It was that line that made me understand the title. Yeah. I was like, oh, I get it.
It's just, you know, it's great. It's just the pages. It's Vader down. I repeat, Darth Vader's been shot down.
Vader ship down.
Who's the writer?
Jason Aaron.
Okay.
Yeah. So I trust in Aaron. I'm okay with it. So.
You might not agree with all of the things in it, but he'll do it well.
And it's fun. The spirit and the tone is there, and that's what's important.
He's really very good at Han Solo dialogue.
Yes.
It's exceptionally so.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, not just cribbing lines from the movie, but making it sound like things that character would say.
I'm surprised there isn't a Han Solo book.
I'm sure there will be.
Yet.
So those are the books we're going to talk about.
Solo
this
Home.
At fanboy.com.
Solo down!
Talk about these books, other books you read, anything having to do with comics. You can talk about it over at ifanboy.com. And let's do some email. We've got some time. Wakanda. Is that real?
Yeah, it is, apparently.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What are the odds that Wakanda would also like comics?
Right. The spelling is different, though, so keep that in mind. But yeah.
So Wakanda's a newly joined iFanboy member, and his question is, or he or she, as a new member, I figure I will ask a question for you guys, and you probably talked about this before. But are we in a comic book renaissance? The topic came up this week in the shop, and it certainly seems so. What did your take? Discuss.
No.
No.
God, no.
God, no.
Well,
it's a dark, dark time.
I think we're on the tail end of a certain kind of one.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, the image boom.
That'd be a creator-owned renaissance.
That's what it was.
Even that is losing steam. Like, I was looking at the image solicits for the latest ones they announced, and there's just not like it's just like nothing in there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but basically, that was almost an economic thing, where the creators who had built up clout for the first time really had a viable place to go and make a lot of money and sell a lot of books, you know, based on their names. And I don't think that that's ever been such a sure shot before. I don't know if you remember, like, I want to say 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, something like that. Like, going and doing, even if you were a relatively big name, going and doing an image series, it didn't necessarily make you any money. You kind of accepted, like, oh, I'm going to do this for fun, but I'm going to lose. You know, it's not going to sell anything. It'll be fine. And that was not the case. That was a big change.
Yeah. But that was a big change 4 years ago now. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think what's happening now is that we're in a scenario where there are so many good things out there. There are so many creators that are getting stuff done. I think more than ever, you know?
Yes.
And it almost reminds me of what happened to I always make the comparison of comics to the music industry, and that comics kind of follows what happened to music 10 years later. And I feel like that's what's happening now. Is what happened with music is that with digital distribution and with all the changes in the music industry, that it really got fragmented, and that where it used to be there was just like a handful of bands and acts that were like, this is the thing, and then it went from that to there's like 50 bands and acts, and it's really hard to find the good thing, and there's just so much choice, and there's so much option, and there's people doing some good things, but nobody's doing anything truly amazing and memorable, you know. And I feel like that's what's happening in comics. I mean, and it's a challenge, because it's like, you know, you look back at the other renaissances, and it's names like, you know, it's names like Neil Adams and Alan Moore and Frank Miller and folks like that. And not to diminish the work that, you know, Scott Snyder and Jason Aaron and Chris Pacello and who is Stuart Immonen and all these other people are doing, but like, think about in 10 years from now, when you look back now, and like, are you ever gonna pick up Infinity and read it again? Like, well, I love Hickman, but really, think about that. That's what I look back on.
I forgot it exists.
Exactly. Like,
say that we take it from 1986. We say Frank Miller and Alan Moore. What is the next name on that list?
Well, the Image guys.
What does that mean?
Todd McFarlane,
okay,
Jim Lee.
Okay, so I guess that's a little live. So then take it from there. Like, who's the next game changer?
Bendis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yep. At that time. Not so much now, okay. But at that time, yeah.
Bendis, Miller, Ellis, maybe?
A little bit of Ellis, yeah.
Ellis, Ennis. I guess the sort of late 90s Vertigo.
Yep.
That's probably your next thing.
Ennis.
Late 90s Vertigo into bankruptcy Marvel.
Yep.
And then after that?
But then after that, you get a lot of you get a strong core of the Brubakers and the Ruckas and like that whole like, you know, mid-2000s, right?
Really, really high quality, consistent stuff from very talented people who knew and loved comics.
But I would call that the last renaissance.
Yeah, I would say Hickman and Aaron are the last vestiges of that group.
we're at the tail end of that now, and I think that we people talking right this minute are waiting for what that next thing is, because we're starting to see the repetition, which is just what Ron was talking about earlier. Yep. Certainly what I've felt is that, like, okay, so what now?
Yep.
For me, it's less about the repetition, more about we finally seen the impact of either parent companies or other media on the books themselves, which they were able to hold off for so long, and it's led to for me, watered down characters and storytelling. It's not up for me. I've read these. I've been going to the store regularly since 1991 and reading them since 1980. I mean, I've read all these stories before, and I'll read them all again. But it's not about repetition to me. It's about the execution of the repetition, which is for me really lacking. And characters aren't compelling.
I agree. And I feel like the art, while there's some interesting things, there's no. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think Russell Datterman's good. He's no Frank Quitely. You know, and that's the thing. Is like, I feel like we're at this weird transition point where I've talked about it before. I think there's a bit of a talent vacuum where, you know, and maybe I'm old and jaded and that sort of thing.
You are.
Which I acknowledge, but, and maybe, you know, living in the past or whatever, but like, I look at the stuff that's on the shelves and I see stuff that's pretty good. But it's not, again, I do the 10 years test. Is it going to be something where I want to have the hardcover on my shelf to revisit 10 years from now? And very few things do I feel that way.
There's a handful of things that we could say that about, but I think you're right. Yeah. I think the other thing that's happening is, you remember in 2000, 2001, New X-Men time, when that was the first sort of, oh, they're going to turn these characters into the movies.
Yeah.
And that actually happened.
Right.
Like, that was the thing that everyone was afraid of. But what happened was, the parent companies really did take over.
Yeah.
Or Marvel gained a parent company. And that's, I mean, if you want to say rebirth, then in the typical sense of Renaissance rebirth, that is what happened. Warner Brothers and Disney, if you're talking about Marvel and DC, remade those companies.
Right.
And yeah, Paul Levitz retired, and the entire line has changed since then.
Vertigo's... Not, I mean, there.
DC is not the company it was when Paul Levitz ran it.
No, and Marvel isn't the same company.
Marvel is not the same company it was before.
When Joe Quesada was running it.
Yeah. Yep. It's just, it's, for me, the last true renaissance of comics was 2000, late 90s, like 98 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Like
right when I got
JLA, Morrison to before.
To Marvel pulling itself out of bankruptcy.
I would say went a little longer than
Marvel
that.
Marvel Knights.
Like, no, Marvel Knights was super early, though.
That was 97, 98, yeah.
98, same era.
Yeah, but that's the beginning of it. But I'm saying the end of it was probably, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sort of seen the trailing bit of it. And
it's,
you know, I still enjoy a lot of the stuff I'm reading. A lot of it's really great, and I'm still loving. I think right now, if it weren't for Image, the comics for me would be in a creative black hole. But there's a lot of things I'm reading that are very marginal.
Yep.
And, like, I read it and I go, I guess that was fine. And I don't really think about it anymore. Not like before when you would read Rucka or Brubaker's Batman and talk about that all week, and then or Bendis's early Avengers stuff where you couldn't believe this was happening. And I haven't had that happen, and I'm just waiting for hopefully the next wave where that does happen again. Hopefully that hasn't gone away with the influence of the Fox deal and the influence of the movie costumes and the influence of DC having four people in charge of the line. And
I can think of a handful of, like, Marvel things. Like I think Jason Aaron's Thor, that first 12 issues or something. That was pretty remarkable. Or go back further.
Absolutely.
Young Avengers.
They're still indicating.
Young Avengers, yeah.
Young Avengers was really one of those, like, oh, this is a thing.
You see, that's what I want.
Those are both books I own.
Yeah.
And
Wade's Daredevil, the first bit.
The first bit, and then it got long on the tooth. But, yeah, but... Yeah, and not to diminish. I mean, like, we probably, you know, like, I
always have that.
Yeah, and Scott Snyder definitely has made his mark and has been one of the A-list names.
I have all 8 grades of Batman on my shelf.
Yeah, exactly.
There are a handful of books out there, but it doesn't feel like a entire industry in renaissance.
It does not at all. So hopefully, I mean, maybe in a couple of years we will. But I still have yet to see. I'm desperate to see the new voice, and the voices that are there right now. They're not bad. They're doing good work. But there's nobody who has burst on the scene like Scott Snyder or Hickman or Jason Aaron has done.
Well, the thing is, if people, longtime listeners, if there are any left, if you go back, you know, 5-6 years, we were having very similar conversations because DC was in their pre-reboot stage was in an awful creative spot.
Yep.
And Marvel, there was a time before the year before that where Josh and I basically weren't reading any Marvel books anymore. And, it, you know, hopefully the – and then Jason Aaron, guys like Scott Snyder, and then there was a bit of a mini creative reboot on both sides. And then it didn't last as long. So we'll see.
Yep. Fascinating.
Not unknown, though. These things happen.
Cool. These things are cyclical.
Yep. They definitely are cyclical. I'm just waiting to see what the next cycle is, or a cycle we've never even heard of. So some
kind of comic you've never even heard of before.
Exactly. So thank you, Wakanda, for joining up as an iFanboy member. We appreciate it. And if you've got a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and try to keep it short, around 30 seconds on the voicemail, and we will not call you back. So,
quick plug for Goodfellas Minute, our second podcast that we do Monday through Friday. Josh, Ron, and I, and sometimes a special guest. Just previously, we had comic book writer and artist Gabriel Hardman, who was fantastic.
Yep,
and motion picture storyboard artist.
Yes,
probably
our most qualified film guest yet.
Like, we know the difference.
Okay, yeah. So we talk totally about the film Goodfellas 1 minute at a time, at about 20 minutes per episode, Monday through Friday, and that's all over at goodfellasminute.com, and we are rapidly devouring this film. By the end of the year, we'll be about halfway through the film.
Yeah.
So that's a good time over at goodfellasminute.com.
Exciting. Also, comic book fans probably took note that a couple of days ago, Jessica Jones premiered on Netflix, and we will watch it and we will talk about it. We just don't know when.
Sometime.
So stay tuned for that. It's going to appear in the feed when it does happen. Similar to like when we talked about Daredevil, there will be a discussion around Jessica Jones. So I'm excited. So.
Yeah, I'm too. Just don't.
It's a lot to take in. It's
like the worst possible weekend to release this.
Oh, yeah, it really is. Yeah. Yeah. So
they're all.
No, this one's particularly bad. It's right before the holidays.
Okay. Well, okay. I think they're planning on shut-ins. I think, but they also, don't they have to release them like quarterly at this point? Like, you know.
Yeah.
It's because of everybody that comes out and like, oh, I have to watch it right away because somebody's going to ruin it for me.
It's the new model. I don't even. We'll get into that in our year-end show. That's how fucked up it is. I talk to people here who actually work in TV, and they basically complain how fucked up it is. So we'll talk about that.
Oh, that's exciting. So we're teasing that.
Yeah.
You can get over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. You can tell us how you think that the new media model is fucked up, and you can talk about this week's books and how they're fucked up or not fucked up. Or you can make sure you go back to Goodfellas Minute, by the way, because we count fucks. You can find all of our other podcasts also at ifanboy.com, and you can follow us on facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter. And of course, individually, we are at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at RonXO on the Twitter.
Yes, and if you enjoy this show as well as Goodfellas Minute, as well as any other podcast you listen to, help everybody out. Write a review in iTunes, help spread the word, or, you know, better yet, go to your comic book store and tell everybody, hey, if you're not listening to iFanboy, you're a loser. And then knock their books out of their hands.
And punch them in the face.
Yeah.
Kick sand.
But no, we appreciate everybody helping spread the word. Tweet about it. Tell folks that you like iFanboy. Send them our way. We thank you for your support. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's show. Our friends in the United States, I wish you a happy Thanksgiving this week. And we'll be back next week, same time. Until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way. wear, why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.